if there is such a thing as levels in spiritual work. The class today reached one that hasn't reached before. Probably the most extraordinary part of today's class for me was you. It was very clear to me how much you guys are growing. And it was extraordinary to be present with you. I mean each of you individually and collectively, and whether or not you felt it or didn't feel it, didn't matter. Something really opened up deeply within every one of you today and was exceedingly part of the whole. Some of you have been here a long time, and I have to say, I really saw the result of your efforts. I kind of had it was sort of like a DNA class. It was like operating at the DNA level. And just watching how your DNA is changing, how it really is modifying in absolutely remarkable and beautiful ways. I know how much the mind wants to own all this or understand all this, and again, it has so little to do with it. Truly, the only thing your mind does to contribute to all of this is gets you in the car and brings you here. It's its whole purpose. And then something else sits here and lets it happen. And it happens because you're here. And what's happening is taking place on such a profound level that it is almost incomprehensible. It is incomprehensible. It has nothing to do with reason or logic or anything you can or any of us can understand. It's simply happening. And it can't happen in a vacuum. It's happening because you're here. Whatever self-selection is involved that brings you to this space, it's here. And whether this is the only pod in the world that's doing this, I have no idea. There's probably thousands of them or millions of them. But we're here doing it. And what we're doing is inexplicable but essential. We are modifying our DNA. We are modifying what it means to be human. We are becoming something deeper and more profoundly us. Something inevitably us. But one has to get there. And you don't get there dreaming or wishing or thinking. You present yourself into the crucible of conscious evolution. In a sense, you've been selected. In a sense, you've selected to be in this process. There are turning points or tipping points in spiritual growth. The early stages are deeply unconscious. You don't know why you want it. There's just a yearning for something else. There's a reaching. And there's a lot of battle inside with your own mind. Why do I do this? Why should I care? It's not real. Just sitting still, it's a waste of time. But still something pushes you toward it. And then when you get there, somewhere in the midst of sitting still, there's this little moment of, this is why I'm doing it. I get it. This is why I'm here. There's something here. There's something in the stillness. There's something in the quiet. Something affirming and powerful and real beyond anything else. But it's very ephemeral, and the mind can't hold it at all. But it recognizes it for a moment, and you go, aha. And then you forget it. Then you go home again and go, why did I bother? But you know why, because something in you registered. It registered. It went, this is what it's about. This is why I do this. And it brings you back. And it brings you back over and over. And as it does that, it weaves a pattern of presenting yourself to a process, to this remarkable process that is in some ways invisible and in some ways becoming visible. The more you do it, the more you start to realize it is the pattern of your life. When you're my age, I mean, this is really 40 years. This is my 40th anniversary of sitting this year. When you sit for 40 years out of, for me, 65 years, it's more than half my life. It's almost two-thirds of my life. It weaves a dense is the wrong word, real pattern of being. And every so often, and today was one of those every so oftens, you get a deep, deep glimpse into why. And again, it's unbelievably affirming of this process. It's what we are meant to do, truly. What we are meant to do. We are called upon to do for ourselves and for something much bigger than ourselves. Something we can't exactly know, but that reveals itself to us in surprising glimpses of deep clarity. One of the things we come to know in our practice, and it's a surprising thing, is that life is real. We don't always really believe that. A lot of people have kind of taught themselves that life is maya, illusion, dream, that it's not quite real. And the only thing that brings a lot of people to reality, if you will, is unavoidable pain. That's why Rudy said pain is God's gift, because pain is real and we can't escape it. That suffering is so unavoidable. It is so at the core of human experience. And it's at the core of human experience because it brings us back to this is real. We don't always like it, especially in the hard part. But what we do like, and I have to say people even in the worst pain somehow know this, this is real. This is life. There's no escaping it, there's no dreaming your way out of it, there's no pretending it doesn't exist. It is. And somehow, even in its awfulness, its mere existence is full of wonder. Life is real. What's less real is your observing of it. Not that it's not real. how you observe your day-to-day life has its own reality, but it's full of projection and image and illusion and fantasy and wishing and hoping and dreaming and anger and all of these things that are reacting to and observing what is real. That part is real to you, but it's not real. Reality is the fact of each moment, the simple fact of each moment. And it is so real that it's hard for the mind to grasp. Not only is it real, it has enormous consequence, which is one of the reasons we fear reality, because things change, and they change in ways that are often deeply uncomfortable, often life-changing. You turn the wrong way on the steering wheel of your car, and you cause great pain to yourself or to other people. You crash into this or that. Consequence, lifelong consequence. And we know that. We know it from experience. It's real. But the unexpected part of real for most people, even when it's, quote, awful, is the wonder of it. The wonder of reality. And the wonder of it is greater than the fact of it. Experiencing wonder at what is real takes you beyond yourself, beyond what even appears to be the solidity of reality. It takes you into a place that is the essence of reality, that is greater than solidity, greater than any material form, and more real. And you can only enter it by accepting reality, or, as I've said often, accepting what is, moment to moment. It's a little bit like Job, you know, being afflicted by God. So much of life is an affliction, and I'm surrounded by people who are afflicted, and I have my own afflictions. And what they are is they're not life challenging. They're just unpleasant pinpricks, if you will, of the universe, and sometimes worse, real gnawing discomforts that don't go away, physical or metaphysical or emotional or psychological. Whatever they are afflictions. And these afflictions seem, and in many ways perhaps are, inescapable. You're often born with them. You know, you're born with neuroses, you're born with freckles that you don't like, or a hair color that you can't stand, or a nose that doesn't quite work. Well, in our society you change a lot of that, but there is the fact of these things that make you unhappy with who you are. Unhappy in your skin, unhappy in your existence. And you think of them as punishment, you think of them as some divine retribution, when in fact they are absolutely the opposite. Your afflictions are really the thing that bring you to the unchangeable reality of your life. Only by accepting your afflictions, only by accepting your struggles, your trials, your difficulties, do you truly, truly enter into reality. That's what they're there for. For Job, and his afflictions were great. For Job, it was all about, can you love God in spite of, or even because of, your afflictions? And of course, Job's great achievement was to do that. It's what we're here to do. To take these difficulties of our lives, the personalities, the seemingly unchangeable, gnawing things that come at us over and over, and just go, yes. Or, as I've said so many times, and Rudy said, surrender to that. And in that surrender, in that acceptance of what is, of what's real, the wonder comes, the gratitude comes, the doorway to yourself arrives, and you step through into this landscape of just pure being. pure infinite being. Do your afflictions go away at that time? Not exactly. And you can't use it to get rid of your afflictions. Your afflictions are there, but what happens is, I'll say this in the wrong way, they don't matter. In truth, they do matter, but they don't. It's like the mere fact of them and your resistance to them starts to alter, and they just exist without resistance, without judgment, without anger and annoyance. And of course, once all those qualities go away, they are, but it doesn't matter because you're not reacting to them. You are accepting them. You are accepting reality. Accepting reality is what transforms you. Dealing with reality transforms you. Let me use that word dealing because it's so important. Accepting reality and surrendering to reality really seems like, for most people, a kind of giving up, a kind of passivity. Let me be very clear. You don't have to accept reality. You can do battle with it. You can engage it. You can change it. You can do anything you want with it. Anything. And it will come back at you as reality. It may allow you to do what you're trying to do. It may not allow you. It may enjoin you in your enormous effort to grow and change and transform, and it may obstruct it. Reality will do what it will do. Your engaging of it is not a passive act. It is an aggressive act sometimes. You do everything you can to interact with reality. Why? Because you're real. You're real. Deal with it. It wants things from you. It wants your transformation. It wants your growth. It wants your evolution. It wants you to go up against what's hard. It wants you to demand transformation and change and evolution in yourself. It's what's working in the universe. So reality isn't just, oh, I can't do it, I'm going to surrender and do nothing. Reality is taking it by its hands and moving forward, engaging the world in the most profound way. But when it is impossible to move beyond something, accept it. When it's possible to do battle, accept it. It is taking reality as it is and involving yourself in it completely. This is very hard for a lot of people. I was talking to someone the other day who had decided that life is an illusion because this person hadn't been able to deal with reality at all. And it was so clear as they were talking that illusion was the biggest cop-out ever. They thought it was surrender. They thought it was an awakening. And it was a complete cop-out. The reason it was a cop-out was because their reality demanded so much work, so much effort to change. And yet, until they made that effort, they would never, ever be able to find joy in this world. Even if they failed at that effort, making that effort to change and to open yourself to life, to take life on in the biggest and most powerful way, to do it, if you will, fearlessly, I use this word badly, but recklessly, to just go and risk it, to just do it, to take it on full force, that is you engaging reality. It's really what it's about. Trying to be safe in this world, trying to step back from reality, which is the normal human experience, is to not feel alive. Feeling alive is going up against what's real, not stepping away from it. Feeling alive is when you don't know what's next. Feeling alive is really taking risks that you would never have done if you wanted to be safe. Safety is the opposite of aliveness. It's comfortable, but it's not alive. I mean, it is, and it's okay, but if you really want to grow as a human being, get rid of safety. not recklessly, really, but bordering on reckless. just enough to make something happen. See where it goes. Who knows? Risk expanding in your life. Risk taking on more than you think you can handle. Risk the possibility that things may come down the road and therefore you're going to do something now. Don't wait until it's all perfect and secure and safe, because then it's too late. Do it while you can. Do it now. I use the word reckless because somebody in this class who I love described my buying or getting, I rented actually, an apartment in New York for no reasons I don't understand. It felt right. It's an expansion I can't exactly afford at this moment in time, and I don't know why I'm doing it. I know this is a very materialistic version of this. And someone said, I love the recklessness of it. And it is reckless. And if the worst comes to worst, I'll get rid of it. And if worst comes to worst, I'll go broke. But if I go broke, you know, and I say this to you honestly, if I go broke, it will not be the worst thing in the world. Because it will be a very dynamic situation. And I don't see going broke at this moment in time, but I'm willing to go to push forward into places that I cannot yet afford in order to allow more to rush in to support it. It's an amazing thing to be able to do, to move forward in a way that is beyond your capacity. How can I do this? How is it possible? I can't. Why would I buy that house when I can't really afford it? Well, because either you're going to make enough money to support it, or you won't, and then you have to, then you lose it, and you move on to something else. Pushing beyond your limits, beyond yourself, is so much Rudy's teaching. Really making these huge efforts in your life because the possibility that exists behind them is wonderful, and the opportunity for life to surge in to support it is remarkable. Sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes you are truly being reckless and ridiculous. People are like that. They will do things that are really off the wall and they don't come from a deep or real place. And you have to be careful when you're being absolutely foolish and stupid. Because this is not about stupidity. This is about growth. It's about seeing possibility. It's about reaching for more than you already are. And the only way to do that is to let go of safety and comfort and just chance. Take the chance. My experience is life supports that. Over and over and over. And I've seen it in people. It doesn't always make it comfortable. Often it's uncomfortable. And often you're going to curse probably me and Rudy and anybody else who ever said this to you. Because a lot of the times it doesn't pay off. It just doesn't work. You try something and it fails. I spent a year writing a proposal for a grant years ago, a year, writing a proposal for a grant that didn't go through. You know, Lockheed Martin and Boeing, the two of them compete for these huge $1 billion government grants. One of them gets it and one of them doesn't. You know, the one who doesn't get it feels stupid. You know, they'd lost it. They're in big trouble now. They didn't get it. They got to scramble and find a whole new way to keep their company going. Well, it's the same with us. The scramble of not getting is often as valuable and as good as the getting, because it moves you into something else. My whole film career started because I didn't get that grant. You know, I had to do something. And that year was wasted on some level. Yeah, nothing came of it, except that we're all sitting here right now. Failure is as big a motivation and as big a part of reality as success. They all function. They're all part of the same thing. They're so real. And they're so vibrant. And we can't understand the end point until we get to the end point, if that even ever happens. It's never even about the end point. It's about living now. It's living in this moment. It's the surge of life that's alive now. It's not about being alive 20 years from now and being safe. It's about being alive now and not knowing anything. That's all it is. It's this very moment to be alive and to feel it and to know it's happening and to sit here and be aware of the enormity of life going on. And today, for me, the birds outside, I love birds. I have since I was a kid. And I would lie in bed as a child and I would hear the birds outside, and they were like speaking God's voice. They were just speaking. I don't know what they were saying, but they were speaking, and they were saying, get out of bed. There's a day here. It's beautiful. You're going to play. You're going to have so much fun. It's so wonderful. There's so much opportunity, a whole day ahead of you. It's going to be great. That's what they say to me. And I'm sitting here teaching today, and the birds are just saying the exact same thing. You are so lucky to be here. It's alive. The universe is speaking dynamically, vibrantly to you in this very second. Listen to it. Listen to what's happening. It's joyous. It's the same joy you had as a child. It's there. It doesn't have to be weighted down by your mind that says, well, this doesn't happen, and it's not as good as they told you it would be, and all of that. Forget that. Forget that. Feel that energy. It's so alive in the moment. It is the energy of your childhood. It's passing through years and years of experience, and that experience colors it. But let go of the experience for 10 seconds, 10 minutes, and feel the vibrant joy of just being. You know, some people get that joy once or twice in their lifetime. And they say, I get it. I get the joy that saints and poets have. I just felt it. I just felt it. Now I know why people experience this ecstasy of life. And they get that, and it changes them. They go, I get what people were talking about. Well, we get that every time we sit down. It's not about a one-time experience. It's not about, oh my God, that's what they've been talking about. This is living it. Every time you sit down, you have an opportunity to know what the poets and saints have been talking about. You are in touch with that same thing. And it is so astounding to me to sit here as a teacher after all these years and feel how blessed and lucky I have been to touch this exquisite place of being over and over and over, and to share it with people. But the greatest joy, and the joy that came to me today, was seeing how it's reflected back in the growth, in the attainment, and in the transformed DNA of everybody in this room. It's not just affecting me, it's changing your lives, and that to me is the greatest joy. So, any questions?
I'm sure many people in the room have the same experience of you speaking about the very thing that's sort of going on. And the funny thing is that the last couple of weeks I've been saying to people, I feel so reckless. And apologizing, because I'm not used to being reckless. It's not really my nature. And I feel like things come out of my mouth, and
right.
a little reckless, and it's both terrifying and fun and dynamic and all these things. And I've been experiencing a lot of what you spoke about today. My life is unbearably full right now, and it's great and exhausting and wonderful. And so this is where I go, because it's where I've always gone. I feel all this dynamic, all this beauty, all this joy in my life. And then I think about all the people that aren't experiencing that. And I think about the shadow side of humanity. And because it does all feel to me that we are all deeply connected to all over the world, I think about that, and I wonder what to do with it. I that's not the right way to put that, but
let me just answer that quickly.
Yeah.
Rudy said something really interesting long ago. He said that there is an absolute, if you will, balance between happiness and unhappiness in the world, and that when happiness seems to be diminishing with lots of unhappiness rising in the world, he said that extra happiness has to go somewhere, so you might as well take it and let it be yours. Then what happens when you express that happiness into the world, or that joy, or that love of being, is what's happening to me as a teacher sitting in this room. It grows. It fills people. You cannot fill it for people who you don't know. You can try. You can send happiness into the energy of the environment, but you can send it directly into people around you. Directly. You can love people. You can be with people. You have a work that allows you to literally put your hands on people and send love into them. That's what you can do. There are billions of people suffering in the world, and as are we in our own way. And what's at work in these people? I'll tell you, and this is an important thing to know. God is at work in these people. In all that suffering, God is at work. So trust that. Just like suffering is working through us and making us grow and find what's real and find what ultimately brings us deep and profound joy, even people suffering around the world will find that. Now, when your suffering is really greater than it is at this moment, and there may come a time where it truly is, all of this will be tested, profoundly tested, as it was in the greatest teachers. I mean, and Christ being one of them, you know, and he lost it. He lost it. As would I, under those circumstances. You completely go, I don't get it. It's too painful. So everything, I don't believe anything I've learned. You know, why have I been forsaken by these truths? And then something happens in that inescapable pain that Christ went through and that we may all go through. In that inescapable pain, something happened, and I don't know what it was, although I think I do. He couldn't go beyond it. He went through it. It brought him to ultimate reality, at which point this flood of compassion burst through him and he forgave everyone who caused him this pain. Why? Because they brought him back to his Father and he said, it's done. It is done. And he left. We are all on that journey. Every single one of us is on that journey. So all of the suffering that you're seeing in the world and all the people that are dealing with the shadow, if you will, are part of the God's work. So stop thinking you're in charge of it. Stop thinking you have anything to do other than deal with your particular allotment of suffering and strife and whatever difficulties you may have. You know, this is your lot. This is your job. If you want to go somewhere overseas, or if you want to go down to sort of part of Los Angeles where people are in deep suffering and work with them directly, you can do that. If that's your choice, if that's your reality, it's still going to be one-on-one. So it's going to be one-on-one with the people who you work with in your practice, or it'll be with one-on-one with people down on Skid Row. Does it matter which ones you choose? Maybe. But the reality is you're doing something real. So you pick it, and don't let your own shadow tell you you're not enough. You're not doing enough for the whole world. You can't do for the whole world, but you can do for the world around you, and probably a little bit more than you're already doing. Probably, even though you can't imagine that, because I know you do a lot. You can do a little bit more. That's what the universe asks of us, a little bit more. Maybe at some points it looks like a lot more, but it's enough that we can do and grow and expand our capacity to do. You know, I mean, if you really get motivated to set up a shelter, or something like that, or do one of those things. There are people who are called upon to do that. That's completely wonderful. And do that. But don't do that at the expense of the joy in your life, of spreading joy. I know a lot of people who do good works who are not good inside. They're doing it because they think that will take care of it. It doesn't take care of it. Doing good things is good in the world. Saving lives, saving whatever, is fine. But if you're not saving, if you will, yourself, meaning bringing yourself to the table, bringing yourself to reality, dealing with your own darkness, dealing with your own suffering, if you don't do that, you can help everybody out there, but you will not have done the single most important work you are here to do, which is doing that for yourself. That's the true work. And you can save the whole world and not save yourself, and you will have failed in your purpose for being here.
Bruce, it feels as though, this isn't a question, this is a reflection, I think, it feels as though if we're shifting and evolving on the cellular level, I'm not saying that that's all we have to do, but it feels as though that in itself
is affecting the dark-light balance and is also helping the whole race.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It does. It does because you will impact the, if you will, the DNA of people around you. DNA, when I use the word DNA and you use cellular, I'm not talking scientifically, really, because I'm not sure about the scientific truth of all of this. I'm talking about something deeper, the configuration of being, whatever that is. I think it's beyond biological. Whatever that is, yes, it changes that. It will change cells, yes, I know, and it probably changes literal DNA, but I'm still talking about something deeper than that, that is a readjustment of the structural integrity of our existence, of our inner being. And by changing that, by letting it change, it's not us who changes it. That's the, we don't do very much of anything except bring ourselves to it. And then it goes in and goes, and all you do is go, okay. It's really interesting. When I teach, you know, my hands go through all these motions, I'm not doing it. Something inside me is moving all of this, and I feel when I'm in alignment with it and when I'm not. And when I'm not, it nudges it away. It moves it. It does it. I just watch it happen. It's so powerful to feel this life energy doing something through my being. And as it does that, I feel what it's doing for other people's being, and I know that we as people impact other people in how we relate to them, both internally, emotionally, and even in our body language. How we are perceived walking down the street. When you see somebody walking down the street in really deep presence, meaning confident, happy, joyful, it ripples out. You feel it. Like, wow. And you see somebody walking like this down the street, you feel it. It arrives at you, and you have to do something with it. You go, oh, per person, so you feel a kind of compassion, or you feel like, I don't want to go there, and you just avoid. But it moves your molecularity in some way. We all move each other's molecularity. So if we are starting to become more whole, more alive, and more substantial and present, it affects life. It is life working to affect life through our presence. And it is a great thing it's doing. So enjoy.
But I just realized that I also have a problem. Just that my crappy personality gets in the way of all this light.
It really does. It really, your crappy personality really is a problem for you. But it is such a beautiful problem. It's your work. And you see it, and even that you expressed it just like that, just now, it's so wonderful to me, arriving at that moment. I love your crappy personality, to be honest. I really do, and so do you on some level. I'm not sure your personality is supposed to change. We are our personality. That's what we are. It will change of its own accord as we grow, but it may not. It may stay the same, but it doesn't matter because the being inside you is what's growing, and that's what I'm watching happening to you. You're growing. The crappy personality, forget it. That's your mother's and father's and everybody else's fault. They formed all that stuff. But you inside that, some of you will change that, and some of you will not change that. You know, it kind of doesn't matter. You know, it doesn't. You know, it's just be yourself. And if you are a really crappy personality, be the best version of that you possibly can be. Tara will have to deal with that. But it's a wonderful thing. Truly, get that. It's only when you finally get that and accept it that real change, if you will, or growth takes place. Just, you are who you are. You can't help it. You can't help it for a minute. You can change little things. Maybe you can lose a little weight. I'm not talking about you, but you know, you can do certain little things. But even those don't tend to last long. We're structured so intensely. So be what you are. Be who you are. That's the whole idea. Be it. Live it. You know, it doesn't matter if you're a curmudgeon. Be a great curmudgeon. Our society, literature loves curmudgeons. They love them. If you're going to be a really dark person, a really dark soul, and do a lot of damage in the world, you know, usually the problem with that is that it's an unconscious act. Because it's a result of unconsciousness. And so if that's what you are, you've got a big role to play here. But even in that, even in embracing your own darkness at that level, there is enormous growth to take place. I remember, I don't know if you do, there was a woman whose house was this guy ran into her house and he took her hostage and she talked him out of it. And he had been escaping from the police, and this wasn't all that long ago. And she talked him out of it. She talked him into giving up. And it was a really powerful story on the news. And he had literally broken out of a jail and run, and he was a really heavy-duty character. They interviewed him right afterward, just describing how she had impacted him. She had brought him into some kind of conscience, some kind of awakening. And I looked into this guy's eyes, and there was a kind of beauty coming through this very dark force that had awakened through some kind of intercession with someone who was present. And it just went, the light bulb went off in him. I don't know where his life will go, but his awakening to his own darkness, to the fact that his darkness brought him to that moment, was very powerful. And I don't know if it will be a permanent transformation for him or not, but boy, oh boy, I saw how one's own dark choices can even then lead you to light. It's possible. It can work. So embrace the thing you are. Josh?
I've been going through a very heavy time for the past few weeks, as you've been witness to some of. And I did have a kind of incredible enlightenment moment today, or a kind of a re-enlightenment moment too. Before this period, when I was in this really good period and really interacting well with the world and feeling confident in myself and the world, and until this moment, I had forgotten how I had done that, how I had been to that space, how I could possibly have been in a good space in this world and interacting well with it. And then today, the words came back to me today. You are not your past. You are kind of at the front of a wave, and you have the option at every moment to choose how you behave, to choose how you act, to choose who you are. You do not have to carry the weight of your past. And thank God I remember that today, and maybe it'll last a few more days, but why do we forget? Why is it so hard to carry that kind of self-awareness with you?
It's a habit. I mean, the one training that is worthy in this lifetime is the training of recognizing where you are. Because what you said, which is really important, is that you're at the head of the wave. And that if you look deep into the wave, what do you discover? You discover the ocean. Not just your own private past, which may be the history of that wave, but the whole ocean is in you. And if you look back just for a moment and you remember that, you realize the level of support behind you, which at times you've caught before, which is what gives you security. Real security is support. It's like you know something real is in you, and you have that. I mean, you have that in spades. You know, when you forget that, it's because you're caught in the foam of the breaking wave, and we all get caught in it. And then something in you has to stop and remember, and structuring your life for this memory to occur, meditation or whatever, is stopping and going, okay, quiet down, look back, see inside, and you see the ocean. And you go, ah, you know, I'm not the wave, I'm the ocean. And that just reestablishes your confidence, if you will, your sense of self, your sense of wholeness, and personal past dissolves into something that is, you know, the past of the universe.
Is there something important about forgetting, about going through the pain and having to find it again and again?
The Hindus describe it as the dance of Krishna and the gopis, which is that the gopis keep hiding. Krishna loves, the gopis love Krishna. They just love Krishna, which is truth, consciousness, bliss. And they're in the forest, and he keeps hiding behind the trees because every time he reappears, they are as delighted as if they're seeing him for the first time. Mm-hmm. And it's that endless rediscovery of Krishna that is such a joy. It's like, oh my God. It's like you never knew it was there, but you always knew it was there. And every time you see it, it's like peekaboo for a little baby. Mm-hmm. You know, you do it 40 times for a baby, and they're delighted every time. It's like, come on, kid. You know, I've already done this 40 times. Why are you still laughing? Because they love it. They love it. And we love it. We love the return. And we lose it because that's part of the human drama. But it is there comes a point where you can live in its presence and actually sustain it, I believe. You know, longer and longer periods and not be as lost. And that actually takes a kind of structural integrity to hold on to that. Something that I was feeling very strongly in class today. I mean, really, literally, this is my 40th year. I met Rudy in September of this year. And 40 years of building something built something. And I was just sitting there going, boy, this is built. It's not over. It's not finished. It's not, you know, it could be broken down, I suppose, in a minute. You've got to be careful of pride here. But I said, this is built. It's not a big deal. It's not as effortful as it was building. But it took 40 years to structure this, the ability to sit present with other people and share that presence. You know, most people can't look at each other in the eyes for 2 seconds. We do it for a long time. There's an enormous amount of stuff going on that is part of the immense joy of, I talked about it a few weeks ago, of communion with another person. That's what this class is. It takes muscle to pull it off. And we're doing it. And then you won't have to rediscover it so much as to live it. Just live it. And yes, it will go away. You know, you saw me a few weeks ago. I went through this horrific period for me. You know, and it was just awful. But, you know, you come out on the other side. You do. One does all the time. And then you go back into it. But you go back into it. As I was in that period with my eyes open, I went, this stinks. This is awful. I went through the whole period going, this is truly awful. It was like your hand on a burner and you couldn't lift it off. This oh my God, this is unpleasant. And I couldn't do anything about it except go through it, knowing consciously that I'm burning like mad. I ran to my Rumi book to look at the poem of Rumi about the garbanzo bean that's in the fire, that's getting squashed on the pan. It's like, let me out! And then finally it understands that only by staying in the pan does its true flavor and true character get expressed.
You missed the best line, the bean going, why are you doing this to me?
right. Well, but that's what we all do. That's what we all do. And I had to run back to that poem because I forgot why we're doing it. And the poem said, I'm doing it because I love you. And of course, you come out the other side. And the last 4 weeks of classes, which have been fairly strong, have all resulted from that particular period of difficulty. So this is all professional stuff, guys, just me and my career. But it was very painful. And it's a period I've moved through and I hope beyond, but it doesn't matter, because if they squish me back into the fire again, I'm telling you, the flavor is released. And you guys are benefiting from the flavor, as am I. So we're all on this journey together. We're all going through the same stuff, every one of us. There's no escaping it. Be gentle, be gracious, love it and embrace it. Is there any more questions?
Best dealing with it if you're working with children who are dying who are pretty much out of time and in a lot of pain.
I think it holds true what I just said. I mean, one is that it will elicit enormous love and compassion from you, which will be meaningful. A little touch to anybody in pain, literal touch, has a great deal of comforting value. Being present with somebody, acknowledging the truth of what they're going through and not saying, it's going to be fine, or you're going to be with God tomorrow, or whatever people do to take you out of this moment, just be there with them in the moment. Don't feed their sadness. In other words, don't contribute to that. Just be present. Be loving. Acknowledge what they're going through. If they're expressing sadness or grief, let them. But a lot of people, that's not, when they're really facing the truth and no time, out of time, they start to touch reality. And often that starts to speak through them. And you do your best to be present. I've been present with dying children. And, you know, they usually reflect the environment around them. And if your parents are hysterical and going through a lot of emotion, those children will be hysterical and go through a lot of emotion. If there's a lot of love and presence and holding and embrace, they tend to resolve themselves into that. And that's probably the best thing you can do for a dying child. Just really be with them. You know, don't try to give them fantasies of future on any level. Future at any point to someone who's out of time is meaningless. Even if it's a fantasy future, you know, they don't want it. What they want is reality, because in that reality, which they're going to get just like any adult or any other person, is God. That reality will be the great arrival. So you treat them like anybody else, ideally, with enormous love, stillness, presence, and compassion. Okay?
What was the name of that poem? Where can we find it?
Rumi. There's a book of poetry by Rumi, and I don't remember the name of it, but I folded it down in New York, and when I go back to New York, I'll look it up and I'll tell you. It's the first poem in one chapter, but it's a great poem. Okay, guys, I know this has been a long one, but, you know, I have to tell you, every class I teach, it's kind of like this may be the last class. Not that it really will, but you never know. So I try to give you everything that you'll need for the rest of your life. So, you know, you're getting a lot of stuff. Thank you for coming.